Now, with your GoDaddy.com domain registration, as a listener of The Chris Perillo Show, enter code CHRIS1 and save an additional 10% on any order. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com.
Exopolitics is a word that many people probably haven't heard of before, but there's a website out there that explains exactly what it is, exopolitics.org, and the subtitle being Political Implications of the Extraterrestrial Presence. It's quite interesting, or at least it sounds quite interesting, and we thought we'd speak with the founder, and I've been told that I can call him Michael, even though his full title is Dr. Michael Sala. And Michael, could you tell me what exopolitics is beyond the simple phrase of political implications of the extraterrestrial presence?
Well, exopolitics, Chris, is really the study of the key actors, institutions, and processes associated with the extraterrestrial hypothesis that UFOs are interplanetary in nature, and that we need to look at the political implications of all of the data that has been generated over 5 decades of sightings, disclosures, experiences. We need to look at all of that data and look at what the political implications of all that is.
That's quite a mouthful. And is this something that you'd kind of brought up on your own, or had this kind of, effort been put together before you kind of put a finer point on it?
Well, yeah, I'm one of the pioneers. Someone else has actually been working in the exopolitics field as well. He gives a slightly different definition to it in terms of exopolitics. He looks at it more in terms of the relations of the political relations between humanity and the visitors, the star visitors, as he calls them. And that particular person is Alfred Weber, and he's been working on exopolitics since around the year 2000. I came into the field around 2003, and, you know, we basically set the field up in terms of some of the key concepts in it, and it's something that many more now are coming on board, and many more exopolitics websites are coming online, both in the US and internationally. So it's very much a term that is taking off.
So you believe, that they're here?
Well, basically, and the way I approach it is to say there's a lot of data out there that says they are here. And so when we look at all this data, we reach an informed conclusion. And that informed conclusion is, for me, that, yes, they are here, they are interacting with humanity, they are interacting with governance, with governments, and that is being kept secret from us, from government agencies that don't want us to know this.
Yeah, but there are people out there who would say that you have no proof, no physical evidence.
Well, that's one of the things that people often say, kind of like, show me the metal, you know, if UFOs are real, you know, show me the door handle or something like that, right? The problem with that is that we have people who have had a number of experiences, whether they've had direct face-to-face encounters with extraterrestrials, or whether they've worked within government agencies where they've had face-to-face encounters with extraterrestrials or worked with extraterrestrial technologies. We've had a number of people come forward to disclose this, and the pattern that emerges always is that the hard evidence is classified, or if it's not classified, it becomes quickly classified, which then means that it's illegal to possess that in the public. I mean, if you have classified technology, it's illegal to talk about that, or your government agencies have the power to come and confiscate that from you, confiscate that from laboratories, confiscate that from universities. And this is what has been happening again and again. So there is a lot of evidence that exists, but it's primarily testimonial evidence. We've got photographs, we've got film footage, we've got first-hand testimonies of people who have been involved in these projects, and we've got documents that have been leaked or that have been released through freedom of information that points to the reality of this phenomenon. So there definitely is evidence there.
Your background, I mean, you obviously have a doctorate. What does that happen to be in?
That's in political science. I was assistant professor in the School of International Service at American University in Washington, D.C. I worked there for 5 years from 1990 1996 to 2001, and then I was there in a research capacity. So I've been teaching and researching international politics basically since 1989, which is when I began doing my PhD program. This field is different because I'm looking at extraterrestrials and the political implications of that. So rather than just looking at international politics, I'm now looking at extraterrestrial politics. So in a sense, I'm kind of looking at this bigger galactic political situation.
So this is so fascinating for me to be hearing this, especially listening to the news or reading the news or hearing the news on what's happening in the Middle East right now. I mean, do you think that if anything would be revealed, were there something to be revealed, that would it make the world a better place or a little bit worse?
Well, I think undoubtedly there are very big implications in the release of a lot of this information, which is why it has been withheld for so many decades. People are divided over this. Officials are divided over this. Some will say, look, if we release this information, it'll revolutionize our planet in terms of economics, health, culture, religion, science, and so forth. And others say if this information is released, it will lead to the collapse of our planetary civilization, as has happened with examples through history, like the Americas with the Aztec and the Mayan, or the Aztec and the Inca civilizations being destroyed by this Spanish civilization coming in. So there's a division there. Personally, I think if this information were to be released, it would revolutionize our planet in a very positive way. There would be incredible technologies, incredible information, changes in terms of our economics, our culture, health, that would lead to a profound improvement in the quality of life of many people around the planet. But at the same time, there are going to be some stress points in that. Some economies are going to have a great difficulty in making that transition. Certain religions are going to have great difficulty in dealing with the truth coming out. So there are challenges, but my personal conclusion is that it will be positive if it were released.
Aren't you risking a lot by coming out and doing this, exopolitics and talking about it and having a website? Aren't you risking ridicule in your own?
Well, more than ridicule, you risk your profession. I mean, I was, in fact, a university researcher, and I had a pretty promising career in academia, but because of my work in this area, that career has come to a halt. Essentially, I was asked to leave the university because of this.
Wow.
So this is one of the things that people in my position have to calculate, or have to make a decision whether it's worth working in this area, risking your job, your salary, your career, and all the perks that go with it, or talking about something that is just so exciting in terms of its potential, in terms of the information, and the revolutionary impact. And people make choices. I've spoken to colleagues who know about this information, who are really interested, but they're very frightened to come forward because it threatens their career. And we're not talking about just people within universities. We're talking about politicians. We're talking about people in the economic sector. They're frightened, but they know that this is real.
Wait a minute. So if there are that many people, can't you all kind of band together and say, you know, we're tired of it. We just got to come out and make a stand.
Well, ideally, that would be the way it would work. And maybe what we need to do is reach a critical mass. Maybe we just haven't reached that critical mass yet, and there's just too many people working as individuals in different sectors trying to get the truth out. But certainly, if politicians started to come out more, for example, we had a former Canadian Defence Minister, Mr. Paul Hallier, who recently came forward saying that this information is real. I mean, he was Canada's Minister for National Defence in the 1960s under the government of Lester Pearson, and basically he is now saying that when he was Minister for Defence, he was not briefed on this, and while he served in the Canadian Parliament, he was never briefed about this information, and so he was quite shocked to realise much later in the piece that this is real and he wasn't briefed. So he's come forward, and many other politicians are kind of looking at his example, and they haven't yet come forward, but they're interested.
Wow. I just, I what's it going to take? I mean, these are general questions, but in your opinion, what's going to happen? Is the government going to come out and say, okay, yeah, they're here, and you know they've been doing this, and we're talking to this, and or are they actually going to make themselves known somewhere, sometime in the near future?
Well, can be a combination of those things. I mean, for example, just a few days ago, Buzz Aldrin, second man to walk on the moon, he actually came out with some statements where he said that while he and the other Apollo 11 astronauts were in flight on that moon mission, they saw a UFO. They saw a UFO outside of their craft, and NASA instructed them to keep it secret. So he's withheld this for over 30 years. I mean, 37 years now since the Apollo 11 mission. And now he's coming forward. Now, why is he coming forward? Has he been given the green light? Is it just him following his own conscience? We're not sure, but essentially I think what that signifies is that with the information age, with the technology that exists through the internet, people are able to share information much more rapidly. The mass media doesn't have that kind of monopoly on information being exchanged in the public sector. So it means a lot of information can get out. So I think it's very hard to keep secrets now. And so we are probably going to witness a combination of disclosures, defections from high government officials or former prestigious astronauts coming forward talking about this, and maybe we'll have government disclosure very soon, or maybe it'll be just extraterrestrials showing up in en masse over major cities.
Wouldn't that just freak people out? I know I've kind of said this already, but I mean, if this isn't done the right way, this could really be a bad thing.
Well, I think you're right that there is a way that you can do this that is going to be beneficial for people. But, I mean, there have been mass sightings over cities before. The Phoenix Lights mm-hmm. in 1997, I mean, that was a mass sighting. Thousands of people in Phoenix saw UFOs. I mean, there wasn't a mass panic. I mean, people didn't start kind of running for the hills. I mean, it was very inspiring to many people. We've had mass sightings in other countries. Mexico, I mean, they're having many sightings down there. Armadas of ships, they're seeing hundreds of ships up in the sky. These are being televised throughout Mexico. We've had mass sightings in Belgium. We had mass sightings in Washington, D.C. back in 1954. So there have been mass sightings where thousands of people have seen UFOs and there hasn't been panic. I think this is one of the things that those that want this information to be withheld keep on harping on, that, well, you know, if UFOs come out and if the truth were known, people would panic. Well, no, I mean, this is not kind of 1937 and Orson Welles. I mean, people have seen mass sightings of UFOs, and there hasn't been mass panic, and people have generally been very positive and receptive to that phenomenon.
Do you think that the media is desensitizing us, getting us ready? If there is a knowledge that's hidden, are they getting us prepared mentally?
Definitely. I think there's been a concerted effort. I mean, over the years, that we've had a number of kind of prominent shows or individuals talking about UFOs, and I think really one of the better examples of that was the Peter Jennings special last year, Seeing is Believing. It's important to point that Peter Jennings is very much a mainstream media personality, or was. Millions of people watched his show, were very familiar with him, and so when they watched him in that special saying that UFOs are very real, that the data is compelling, and that we need to consider this seriously, I think a lot of people basically woke up, and a lot of people thought, well, this is something we need to look at. And I think that the mass media is slowly conditioning the general population for the truth behind this, and there have been numerous specials, History Channel specials, the Sci-Fi Channel and other prominent organizations or cable stations that have been releasing information on UFOs, on extraterrestrial civilizations, that is slowly conditioning people.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm excited, at the same time cautious. I mean, it's interesting when like on your website, exopolitics.org, you list that there's not just one alien species that's been here, but several. Dozens.
That's right, yes. I mean, there have been a number of people who have come forward who have disclosed that they have had access to top secret documents in the course of their duties, where they saw different extraterrestrial civilizations discussed in these official government documents. And I'll just give you two examples, two quick examples. One was Robert Dean, who worked at NATO back in 1963 to 66. He worked in NATO in Brussels, and he had access to a top-secret NATO document called the Assessment, where they discussed four different types of extraterrestrial civilizations that were visiting the Earth and interacting with humanity in different ways. One of those races looked so indistinguishable from humanity that they could blend in very easily. And this was, Dean said that this was one of the things that really shocked the NATO military leadership, that these extraterrestrials looked so much like us that they could stroll up the corridors of NATO and people wouldn't even know about it.
What? Really?
So, that was in the NATO document, the assessment.
So they're already here among us.
That's correct. Yes, they've been here since the 40s. We began getting data on the extraterrestrial visitors since the 1940s. But in 1964, NATO prepared a document discussing the extraterrestrial presence, and this document, the assessment, pointed to the different categories of extraterrestrial visitors, and one of those being so much like us that they just fit in and they're very much with us. They're walking around the general population. That's how much they're integrated with us.
Wow.
And there's been a subsequent whistleblower who's come forward to talk about a document he saw while he was employed in a top-secret elite UFO recovery team. He was given access to a manual, a medical manual, on how to administer first aid to any injured extraterrestrials. And this manual described 57 different types of extraterrestrial visitors.
Whoa. You're serious? I mean, obviously we're talking about a document. You know, have you actually seen the document? I mean, is it, you know, has it been carbon dated, all that stuff?
No, this is not a document, just as the assessment that these are not documents that are being disclosed to the general public. What we have is people with impeccable military credentials who have come forward and who said that they had these security clearances and that they had access to those documents while they were employed with the military. Robert Dean was employed at NATO's headquarters, the supreme headquarters of the Allied Powers in Europe back in the 1960s, and Sergeant Robert Clifford Stone was employed with the U.S. Army from 1969 to 89, where he had access to that document that he described as a guidebook.
Now, have you ever interacted with any extraterrestrial yourself?
No, unfortunately that hasn't happened with me. I like many others, hope that that will happen one day, but no, I'm not aware of any extraterrestrial contact experience that I've been exposed to.
And now, and with, as you say, kind of a Heinz 57 variety of alien species or extraterrestrials, are they all good? Are they all bad? Are they kind of in between?
Well, my own research has basically pointed to them being all over the place. They seem to be as varied as us. It seems that the majority of them are genuinely benevolent, wanting to assist humanity in its evolution, and are doing many things to assist us, whether it's through consciousness raising of individuals, sharing philosophy, or actually helping in terms of us gaining a better idea of some environmentally friendly technologies. And there are other groups of extraterrestrials who behave in ways that we would consider to be more nefarious. And so I think that in a way, extraterrestrials are no different to, say, the way in which the colonial powers in the 16th, 17th century went off to conquer the world. You had the British, the French, the Portuguese and the Spanish. They all went out there with their civilizing missions. Now, some might say, well, they went out to conquer, rape and pillage. Some might say that they went out there to civilize and uplift and share technology. It's which perspective do you adopt? But certainly, I think the extraterrestrial visitors have incredibly advanced technologies, and they are here, and they're interacting with us.
Yeah, I think saying that they have advanced technologies beyond ours is almost a given. I mean, if they're not coming from within our own galaxy, I mean, they obviously have to be coming from somewhere.
Well, that's right. They're able to travel incredible distances. Now, whether it's from other star systems in our galaxy or whether it's from other dimensions, I mean, people are divided about that. But certainly they have technology that's able to manipulate time and space so that they can travel incredible from incredible distances in the galaxy or even other galaxies, apparently. So, yes, their technology is something way beyond us. But it seems that there's been breakthroughs in the way in which scientists understand kind of greater than light speed technology, and now there's an acceptance that there's a possibility of such things as wormholes, stargates, and so forth that can make it possible for travel through the galaxy and cover great distances.
Wow. You know, it almost makes me feel small in a way, just to think that there's stuff going on just, you know, beyond this planet and beyond our own political system. There's a whole different kind of political infrastructure out there. Is it, do you know, I mean, obviously through your research you haven't interacted, and again, like I said, it's difficult for me. I'm not necessarily going to label myself a doubting Thomas, but I do want to retain a bit of skepticism. Is there, with there being, let's say, benevolent beings and not so benevolent beings, is there some kind of galactic senate, much like there would be in Star Wars, where these various races and species get together and talk about things?
Well, it seems to be some kind of principle of non-interference, which kind of is applied here, which is why we haven't had mass exposure or by the extraterrestrials, that they haven't just simply shown up and said, hi, we're here. Apparently, they are following the wishes of our governments that want to keep this secret. The governments, I think, are most concerned of the national security implications of this breaking out into the open, because they know the tremendous changes that would emerge from extraterrestrials suddenly showing up with incredibly advanced technologies, information, cultures, different takes on religious history, that this would have tremendous impact. And so they're wanting to, I guess, keep the changes moving at a pace that they're comfortable with. I think the way we can better understand this conceptually is to kind of think back to how would you have been if you were, say, the leader of a medieval society back in the 18th, 19th century when you had these advanced colonial powers come to your shores. You know, would you have just fought them off, or would you have said, well, you know, welcome, but know that fully well that they have the technology to take you over, which is what they did in many cases. And we have many examples of colonial governments coming into power in throughout different areas of the world. So these are the sorts of issues that I think do perturb the policymakers. They're trying to work out how best to deal with this information and control it. Because they, I think, really do fear the changes that would emerge and that they would lose a lot of power.
Which wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing in some cases.
I think in some cases it would be a very positive thing, because we would have a greater sharing of power, and it would also help the planet unite too when we suddenly realize that the kind of differences that we have between ourselves in terms of culture or racial differences, that these are kind of minimal when you compare the differences we have as a civilization with other planetary beings in terms of the way they look and the way they interact with one another, that this information, if it came out, could help unite us and really usher in a golden age. And this is something that really inspires many of us to work to get this information out.
So why are they messing with us? And I don't mean messing in a bad way. Let me try saying that in a different way. Why these random sightings, let's say like the Phoenix Lights or the sightings in Mexico or a recent rash in Australia, as I've come to learn, why? Why are they just here, there, and why are they doing it? If they don't want to interrupt, then why are they interrupting?
Okay, well, I think basically what that suggests to me is that their motivation, and in here let me kind of speculate a little because that's the nature of the question there. I think that they're doing it because they know fully well that the mass of humanity wants this to happen, but that there are an elite, a smaller group who are in control of the national security system that don't want this to happen. So I think they're basically showing up in a kind of limited way, in a manageable way, over some population centers, to show the people that, yes, they are real, but doing it in a way that doesn't lead to a breakdown in the secrecy system. So that way, and I think that they're kind of trying to nudge the elite, those within government who have control over these policies, they're trying to nudge them in the direction of disclosing the truth. And that's why I think they're showing up in Mexico City, Phoenix, Belgium, Brussels, and so forth.
You think this is just going to work with nudges, or is someone going to have to shove?
Well, that's a really interesting question, Chris. I'm not sure whether this will be enough. I mean, it seems that the rate of disclosure is something that's just moving along gradually. More and more people are becoming aware of this. Now, you know, how long can this go for? Can they keep it secret for another 6 months or 6 years or 60 years? I don't think they can keep it secret for much longer. I certainly wouldn't go much more than, say, a few more years because of the internet and the way in which we're able to share information. And also the rate at which extraterrestrial visitors are showing up, that seems to be something that can't be stopped.
Has that increased? I mean, if you're talking about a rate, scientifically speaking, has the number of sightings or reports of sightings or things like the Phoenix Lights, and I know we keep kind of coming back to that example, but at least in my memory, in recent times, that's the one that just seems to stand out the most in terms of, you know, something weird happening over a large area.
Okay, well, I mean, Mexico City is a good example of where you have mass sightings. I mean, they have reported numerous UFO sightings over different parts of Mexico and even over Mexico City. Hundreds, literally hundreds of UFOs in the sky, armadas or fleets of these UFOs up there. And the Mexicans are able to kind of digest this. They discuss it rationally. They're talking about these visitors from outer space. And the Mexican public seems to be ready to move forward in the truth here. Now, we are having mass sightings in certain parts of the United States even now. In the Mount Adams area of Washington State, there's a ranch where James Gilliland is able to film and document many different UFOs flying in that vicinity. So there are mass sightings happening even in the United States. So it's definitely been picking up.
Hmm. And you think we're going to hit a point? And it's all speculation. How do you think it's going to happen?
Well, you know, I think it's probably going to happen from a number of different sources, all kind of working together. We're going to have an increase in mass sightings. We're going to have more prominent people coming forward telling what has been happening behind the scenes. We're going to have major media people covering this story seriously and not laughing it off. And we're going to have gradual disclosures eventually coming through the mainstream political system. So I think we're going to have all of these things all working together. And also the religious leadership. I mean, we shouldn't forget that. There have been signs that the Vatican has been preparing the Roman Catholics around the world for the truth. There's a Monsignor with the Roman Catholic Church, Monsignor Corrado Balducci, who has been allowed to come forward and talk about extraterrestrial civilizations and where they fit into the religious hierarchy. And so he's been able to do this without the Pope preventing him. And in fact, he was briefing the previous Pope, John Paul II. He was actually briefing the Pope on his extraterrestrial information. So even the Catholic Church is getting ready for this.
Wait, where could we find more information on that?
Corrado Balducci, he operates out of Rome. He appeared at a recent X conference in Washington, D.C., back in 2005. I can give you the website link for that, if you like, and
sure.
That way you can find out exactly what it was he said.
Sure. You can just send it through email or something like that, and then
we'll sure.
be sure we can get it
into
the website. You know, taking a step back, I mean, this is obviously a big, it's part of the conspiracy sphere, it's part of the UFO sphere, crop circles, UFOs, you know, government conspiracy. With so much misinformation out there, how do you ever intend on information, I mean valid information, getting through?
Well, I mean, this is where the whole kind of scholarship comes in. You need to look at this in terms of a problem. There's a scholarly problem here that you have a lot of people experiencing things and saying things, and then you have the official position, which is none of this is true, it's all made up, and these people are delusional, right? So you've got these two positions, and so you look at all of the data. It's just like any research problem. Now, I, for example, worked in the field of human rights when I was teaching international politics. So I was actually going out there investigating human rights abuses, and we regularly encountered this problem. I mean, for example, I would go into a country like Indonesia and into a place like East Timor and say, okay, people are telling us about human rights abuses in East Timor. And people would come up and tell you about it, but when you go to the Indonesian authorities, they would say, oh, no, that's all made up. None of that is true. And you had the major supporters of Indonesia at the time, Britain, the US and other countries, saying, yes, well, this is all exaggerated. It's not true. So as a scholar in international politics, you understand that there's often a difference between what people are saying and experiencing with what politicians and those in official institutions are saying. And I think that basically the UFO field is nothing different.
Hmm. With so many different opinions and so many different thoughts, it's kind of hard. I mean, getting back to, you know, how to get people kind of united, it seems to have, you know, they've tried to do it. I know there are certain ufology organizations. MUFON springs to mind. Are there any leading kind of organizations where they can at least agree on certain concepts to unite this front of beliefs?
Well, yes, there's an organization that's been running for just over a year now. It's called the Exopolitics Institute, and the website for that is exopoliticsinstitute.org. People can go to my website to get information, but basically that is a group of scholars who are researching the exopolitical phenomenon here and are trying to reach consensus about what to do. And so there are a number of things that have been achieved. There's a journal, there's a conference, there's online courses that are now being offered, and even certificates and diplomas. These are all things that you can achieve by going through the Exopolitics Institute. So that's definitely one organization, and there are other organizations that have been out in the field, and I think you've mentioned some of them.
In terms of when you say the other people, let's say in the Exopolitics Institute, which obviously you're a part of, you say scholars. I mean, are these also credentialed folks, people who also have degrees, or...?
Yes, we have a combination of scholars such as myself who have PhDs, who have track records in terms of academic appointments at universities. We have some journalists. We have people who have been researching the field for decades, investigators, and we even have a few experiences, people who have had experiences that are very significant for understanding the exopolitical field. So we have brought together under this organization a number of people that can talk about this phenomenon in a clearly thought through, in coherent fashion.
How are you going to get mainstream science and scientists to kind of hop on board? How are you going to win them over?
Well, I think the key with any scholarly endeavor is to be able to write in a persuasive way, to present your arguments and your evidence in a way that's going to appeal to people. Now, the thing is, we have more success now because we're having people who are very mainstream coming forward. For example, I mentioned Buzz Aldrin. Well, he was the second man to walk on the moon. He has just come forward and said that he and the other Apollo astronauts saw a UFO while they were in space, and that NASA instructed them to keep it secret, and he's kept it secret for 37 years. Now, you think about that. Here you have a disclosure by a very important individual, an astronaut, in one of the most important missions ever in human history, saying that he was instructed by NASA to keep quiet, and he's been quiet for 37 years, and now he's telling the truth about the UFOs. Why did NASA tell him to keep it quiet? If UFOs were make-believe or delusional, why would they care if astronauts were saying that they're seeing UFOs outside of their craft while they're flying through space? It's because there's something to it.
Hmm.
And this is why it's so important to look at the testimony of these high-level people who are coming forward, like Buzz Aldrin, like Paul Hallier, the former Canadian Defence Minister, and others.
Do you know of any U.S. government officials that have stepped forward, either, you know, former politicians or even current politicians, to say, hey, all right, I'm putting my career on the line. This is the way it is?
There was a congressman from New Mexico, Stephen Schiff, who was very prominent in terms of getting the General Accounting Office to do a thorough investigation of the 1947 UFO crash at Roswell. He was very prominent behind this phenomenon, and he was instrumental in the GAO releasing an in-depth study on that. Unfortunately, and people say that this was very suspicious, he died of cancer soon after the GAO released their report. So he's gone.
Wow.
And I think this is one of the kind of more sinister aspects of this whole phenomenon, that high-level people who do come forward and talk about this phenomenon have an annoying habit of losing office or disappearing.
That's kind of scary. I mean, then why do it?
Well, you know, this is the risk. I mean, this is the risk we all take. You know, whether it's the risk you run as a professional who may lose your salary, may lose your career, your health, or even your life. I mean, we all take risks in coming forward, but I mean, this is the importance of the issue, that those who do come forward eventually reach a position where they decide that going forward without talking about what they know is much worse than accepting the sacrifices that go along with disclosing the truth or releasing the information you know. And there are people who are doing that. There's a former NASA space administrator who was sacked back in 1991 because he was researching UFOs, and he had been working from 1958 to 1991. That's Clark McClelland. And he has suffered tremendously because of his commitment to getting this information out. Just a question for you. Was there anything that kind of got you to take this field seriously? Was there any one event or person you talked to that made you think that there's something to this and it's worth covering?
No, I think it's just kind of a pardon this phrase again, a morbid curiosity. You know, it's like I want to know, but at the same time I don't want to know.
Right.
And I think it's certainly exciting, and I can't say that I believe everybody, because they're, you know, admittedly some people just don't sound like they're all quite there. But then there are people, and yourself included, you know, who have a very intelligent perspective on this situation. And see, this is the thing. I do believe there's life in the universe. I don't know if I've yet seen or experienced enough to say, yeah, it's happening, but I'm not necessarily going to doubt those who have. So I'm kind of in this weird middle ground where I believe, and yet I have that small amount of skepticism that I'm hoping is going to keep me grounded in this chasm between, you know, the people on this extreme that just don't believe, and the people on this extreme who say, yeah, it's happening, it's going to happen. That's where I find myself in playing, you know, in this middle ground. And it's interesting because I can see both sides of the story, you know, both sides of the coin at the same time.
Yeah, that's a good place to be. I mean, keeping an open mind to it. I mean, we all got to keep an open mind. I mean, I'm certainly learning new things every day. I mean, there are a lot of things that I am surprised by, you know, when I do the research on this. I learn something new that I hadn't considered before, and so it's just a learning process for us all.
Yeah.
Whether you've been in the field for, you know, 5 years or, you know, 5 weeks, it's a learning process.
Now, what about you? I mean, how did you kind of get the ball rolling in walking down this path? What was it for you? Did you obviously hadn't had an experience, or maybe you had. You hadn't necessarily.
Yeah.
We had talked that you hadn't actually interacted.
Yeah.
What was it for you?
Well, the key for me was the Disclosure Project press conference in May of 2001. I mean, there were 22 former military, aviation, government officials who talked about their involvement in covering up or experiencing UFOs and extraterrestrials. And so I saw that, and it was, wow, this is real. I mean, prior to that, I had always believed that extraterrestrials are real, but I always assumed that, well, you know, they're way out there, and maybe one day they'll come here, and maybe it'll happen in my lifetime, right? But when I saw that, I realized that, wow, this has been going on right under our noses, and it's kind of like something that's very real and something that I can do research on. And that's when basically things shifted for me.
So if I can maybe kind of retranslate, are you working on some kind of document, whether it's an outline or some type of rules of procedure through exopolitics.org? That, you know, someone could download like a PDF or you know, read, this is how we should be, this is what we should be preparing for, kind of outlining how things could go?
We haven't yet gone to that. We haven't done that yet. I mean, that's something that I think really would be a good project to do. We are researching different aspects of the whole exopolitical phenomenon. People are doing things on government cover-up, on the way in which elite political figures have